You've got oh no, you've got one of it now. There was a menu open on my screen, but it's gone.
Yeah, yeah, I was just adjusting your levels because you've gone really quiet.
Oh, so I was leaning away from the microphone, so it may have gone down again. There we go.
I will say though, since you got that pre on it, your audio is really clean.
That's good. It's not. That was a worthwhile investment, wasn't it?
Although I will say now, every single time you tap anywhere near your desk, creak on your chair, fucking, I'm like, oh, I can hear it. So I don't get a new chair anymore. People can just listen to it. It's like even when you know when you're typing the show notes up, I'm like, yep. I could edit this out. But no. I've had to listen to this. So do you.
I've had to suffer. You can suffer too.
Now you know the horrors that I have to deal with. Either way.
Good day, buddy. I'm the Suffolk Ram.
Scazius.
Welcome to episode 184 of the Van Nerds Podcast.
Four.
We're marching towards 200.
I had a panic attack just now. I was like, did I just title the last podcast the wrong thing?
Don't you do that every single time?
Yes.
But you've never got it wrong. But every single time you say, I've got the right number, haven't I?
So what episode is this? I just
184.
Said it. But why is that? Because it's the one that came after the last one. So what's the next one again? It's like that one. So what did I title the last one? So for Christ's sake.
If it makes you feel better, every time I set the new next one up, I have to go back and look to see which one we just did. And I split us up on our thing. You could put like seasons. So I split the seasons up by year.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I have to sit there and count my fingers what year or season we are in.
So hang on a minute. So that number in it. Mate, such a brain ache. That's what I was doing with the daily vlogs. I was like, wait, was that a leap year? Have I missed a vlog? Oh no. It's like, why? Why can't we just do things the easy way? Like, I don't know. A season's a week.
Yeah. Well, we could just give the episodes or do what I do with the, what do you call it? The other thing we do, which I edit for the games night. That's it. Let's do them by date.
I was going to say, what other thing do we actually do? You actually have me now. I was like, what's he on about? What else do we do? It's just a podcast, isn't it?
Many things. People don't need to know all the things we get up to.
Yeah, that makes it sound like really creepy. They're like, hang on, those two already look dodgy enough as it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, wow, people must know.
People think we're talking remotely, but actual fact, that they're just the opposite sides of the same room.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I'm just like...
Hi, Scaz. Oh, yeah.
We've got a line of tape going across the ceiling, and that's where the divide is. So we changed the set. So Ram's got this kind of wooden groove going halfway through.
Yeah, and then if you turn 90 degrees, you'll see a white wall.
Because we got the studio set up, right, and we just wanted it to be so like people didn't realise that we're in breach of COVID rules and having parties and stuff.
Yeah.
So we just... Oh, no, I just told everyone.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. Look, Balls doesn't care. We've established this.
Yeah.
He's playing a party about it.
Yeah, we got caught. Woo! We got away with it for this long.
One of his solutions to this matter was like he's going to suggest they're talking about it, and there's probably talk that he's going to ban alcohol at work. It's like, well, you're fucked if you're a landlord, aren't you? Then really,
mate,
or you own a club, or you know, you own a pub, a club, you're rather screwed, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised, like, actually. We still have all those pubs that are open. Like, we didn't have more closures during the lockdowns and stuff.
Well, obviously, a lot of them got those loans, isn't they, to help them out, and they got given a grant to help them, which I know wasn't perfect, but I suppose the only thing you've got to bear in mind during lockdown is, yes, they're shut. But they've got a lot of their, although it's not also disappeared, their expenses have reduced.
Because
They're not buying stock in, and they're not paying so much for power and stuff. I mean, they're still paying, if they furloughed their staff, they're being paid by the government for the furloughed staff. So that's not costing them, that's only costing them 20% of their normal wages. So they had a way, I mean, that was the whole point of the schemes, was to just give them a way to survive, but obviously not as good. They were surviving, they weren't thriving.
That's it.
That's why a lot of them started doing like takeaways and
Yeah, one down the road from us, they started doing roast dinners and stuff.
Mm.
And then set up a food cart and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, which is still there. Yeah. I must try it sometime.
It's pretty good, actually. It's pretty good. Mm. Just, you know.
Well, Chopley is, I've had this issue before, was I don't know if they take card knocks. I don't carry cash
from
this. Oh, that's right. Yeah. I might pop in one time when I'm on the way back.
That'd be home. Almost suicide these days.
It would.
Yeah, because a lot of people, like, no one carries cash around. And I'm the cash guy.
Mm.
You know, a lot of places over the last few years, they won't take cash. So,
yeah, I remember getting told this story. I went to part of my degree course. I went to see a chap who started an ale shop.
All right.
And it's proper, it's called the Real Ale Shop, and it's proper ale. I was in conditioned ale, so it's still got some of the, when you actually get out, it's still got some of the bits at the bottom of it from the barrel. So you have to let it settle. Should. You have to let it settle for like half an hour before you can drink it, and then pour it very gently. And he was there, and he was saying when he first saw saying the shop up, they're discussing it. He was discussing about cards. They'd hired somebody who'd worked in retail to help him out, and he said he wasn't going to bother having a card reader. And the guy was like, "No, you must have a card." I mean, this is going back about 15 years or so now.
Yeah,
when he was saying it up. And the guy's like, no, seriously, you must have a card reader. And the guy's like, I'm not sure if it's really worth it. You know, we do cash only and so forth. I'm not sure it's worth it. And apparently what changed his mind was he went to a, he was going to, no, he's looking at another farm shop. He went to a farm shop and he was buying some stuff. And there's this woman in front of his citizen, and she said, you can tell she had money. She drove it in like a, I said, you know, they've got money when they've got a car, which always drips petrol out the back end as it's driving. Like a big Beamer or something, or it might be a big Ranger, some big 4x4 car, clearly worth a lot, and fairly new.
Mm-hmm.
And she went shopping, she had a basket and filled her loads of stuff on it, went to the cash counter and was scanning it all through, and she was just ahead of him. And it come to like £120. She hands over a card, and the cashier goes, oh, I'm sorry, we don't take cards, we need cash. And she went, well, that sounds like a you problem, and just walked out the store.
Wow.
And it's at that point, that fully made my mind up, we were taking card.
Yeah, that's it.
So
I mean, I remember when, because I used to hang out with a lot of folks in the city when they came down to Lowestoft, because we're like 100 years behind everywhere else in the country, because we're, you know, back in the boonies. It kind of amazed me.
150.
That's it. It amazed me to see like people just walking around, because I always used to carry around cash, because back in the day that's what you did, right? Just to see these friends just like taking the card out of their pocket and then, you know, oh, here you go, and then they charge it. And now Tap and Pay and Google Pay, Apple Pay, the other stuff that some of the other banks kind of provide, where you can just tap your phone and all that kind of stuff as well. I never thought I would go, I don't want to use cash anymore, but it's just so much more convenient. I'm not the kind of guy to give up for convenience, but
yeah,
you've got to take card. And even when I was doing my businessy stuff back in the day, setting up, you can get a card reader and stuff like really, really cheap.
Yeah, these days you can.
And well, even back then, it wasn't hugely expensive. It was the processing that was a pain in the ass.
It's about 2% usually of your. Well, some I know some used to supply it for free, but they used to charge like 2% processing fee.
Yeah. So, but like, it was just so much easier as well, though, for me to keep up with my accounts. Because, you know, people just put the card in, bam, it goes into the business account, it's there.
Yeah.
I don't have to like start tallying things up and all that. It's just right there.
Yeah.
I have a card attached to that account, and that account is also the same one I take payment on, so everything is right there at the end of the month. I was just like, mate, this is just the way.
It's the way.
You can't that. And then when COVID came about, lockdown and all that, and places are like, yeah, we won't take cash, I was like, well, gonna have to, which like that flies into another conspiracy theory that everyone has, that COVID was a thing to get rid of cash.
I don't think COVID was a thing to get rid of cash. However, I do think it was a lot of governments the opportunity to try and get rid of cash.
Yeah.
Because cash processing has a massive overhead. Indeed, cash is really awkward to deal with. If everything was all contactless money, it'd be a lot easier across the board to deal with everything.
Yeah.
you know, just processing and dealing with it. And
well, let's be fair, it's all numbers in a database anyway, isn't it?
So, exactly. It all eventually turns into numbers, but you know, making it, printing it, processing it, inventing, constantly keeping ahead of the fraudsters, which is a constant arms race battle. It all costs a lot of money to do. So if you can get rid of cash, then you save a lot of money. I'm very much like you. I don't carry cash really anywhere these days. I very rarely have cash. Mainly because I really hate change.
Shrapnel.
You know, yeah, I really hate it. And in fact, I got a new wallet. Hasn't got a space to put change in it. But I thought to myself, why don't we use it?
So what's the point of a wallet?
Well, it's got my cards in it.
Well, yeah, but have you seen those though? Like all the all those like wallets that they look, they say it's a wallet, but it's literally just a card sleeve.
Oh no, it folds. I mean, it's got space for folding money, just not change.
Sure.
So you can put folding money. I mean, it was made by Barber, which I suspect they probably assume that people in Barber probably only put like £50 notes in it. So,
God, mate, I haven't seen a 50 in years.
Oh, I see him fairly regularly because of the way I work. I see him fairly regularly. Not many, probably because of like one or two a month. So fairly regularly. And I hate having change. You go to your post, pay cash, you have them have a nice crisp plastic note, and they hand you back a load of shrapnel. I was like, what the fuck am I going to do with this?
Put it in a sock and hit them with it.
It's going to go in my pocket. It's like, the coffee machine at work we don't use because we get free coffee anyway. So it's like, it just sits in your pocket and it gradually builds up. And eventually you end up going somewhere, buying something, like hand them over a pile of shrapnel to get rid of it.
Well, you say that, but even vendors and coffee machines and that all take contactless, don't they?
No, most do nowadays, yeah.
I was going to say.
Yeah, oh, you're screwed. Just screwed, really. Having said that, one thing I dislike about contact is it's very easy to overspend.
Oh, yeah, because there's no actual physical exchange.
There's no visual. Yeah. When it's in your wallet and you see it and you hand the money over and you can see it disappearing, there's a conscience there of, oh shit, I'm spending money.
See, I tried to explain that the other day to someone when I was saying that kids these days don't quite understand money. Well, like, we didn't when we were younger either until we started working for it and all that kind of stuff. But, like, the idea that now, literally, you take your kiddies to a shop and you, like, I don't know, tap the magic plastic, or for some reason mum or dad has tapped their watch to this thing and all of a sudden the person at the shop is just letting them walk out with it. There's nothing there for them to actually process that you've done anything, that there's actually been an exchange. You've just kind of done this motion and something has happened. You can't actually show your children that you have no money if you don't actually carry money.
Yeah.
But why can't you just get more? Just do the thing where you tap your wrist or tap your phone or tap the plastic thing.
It is actually, it's a very complicated process to exchange, to explain. Well, this magic thing goes to another magic thing, takes money out of this magic thing, which is a number that goes down, and then it disappears out of my thing. And then to get more, I have to work, and they put more money, more numbers into my account, and then I can take the magic thing again. Cash, you hand something over and you get something back.
See, explaining to my children that, like, if I work, no actual money goes from one person to another. It's just a number gets taken from them and added on to me. Like, it's not like some bloke literally takes a stack of 50s, hands me a stack of 50s, or hands my accountant a stack of 50s or whatever like that. It's just literally, can we take two off of here and add two onto them?
Yeah.
Excellent. And that's it. And it's like, and they were like, that sounds really, really, really dumb. And I was like, yeah, because it doesn't really exist. Like, it's not really a thing anymore. It used to be. It used to have, like,
well, meaning. once you got with the gold standard, it basically disappeared.
Yeah.
Because the whole point of the gold standard was all your money was backed up by gold. Once we got rid of that, then it's not backed up by anything. There's no backup. I mean, I don't remember what it is. I saw a statistic once that actually, there is not enough and it's pretty obvious when you think about it, really, there's not enough notes in circulation to represent all the money in the country. I mean, it's obvious if you think about it, but I think it's only something like 5% of the, if that, of the currency in the country we could actually represent with notes.
Mate, like, could you imagine, like, how bad is that going to be for, like, Bond villains and that, when they open up the old briefcase full of cash?
The end of the old briefcase is a debit card there.
I want to do that skit now for like, a short film or whatever.
Yeah. You got the money, you hand it over, it's a prepaid Visa. Now, remember, you've got to use it in 3 years, otherwise it disappears.
Just give him a Bitcoin, fucking a QR code.
Yeah. Oh, no, an NFT.
Yeah. It's like, oh, mate, it's valued at. And they're like, what? And trying to explain NFTs to my kids as well. I was like, yeah, don't.
To be honest, I don't really. I've read loads of explanations of NFTs. I still don't understand them. I think the reason I don't understand them is that's stupid, but I can't get my head around it. Because it seems like it's like, so you own a number that says you own this picture, but you don't actually own the picture because anyone can just copy it. But there's a little link in a database that says the person who owns this number, which represents this picture, owns it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, but what?
That's insanity, isn't it?
I just can't get my head round. I still like go and think, am I missing something here? There's something like, but you don't own it.
But for us, it seems really crazy, and this is another thing I was trying to explain to folks, like, recent. Like, for us, that kind of stuff seems crazy, but in a generation or two's time, it's going to be completely normal.
Right until one of the NFT servers disappears.
Yeah, but then that's when chaos happens, and they start freaking out, why did no one warn us? It's like, well, you all said we were crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but it's just because you're old and you don't understand. It's like, we do.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know. So, NFTs is the same way as trying to explain to my children that there was a time before people didn't have television. Like, it was radio. Then it was TV. You know, then you had the home video, DVD, Blu-ray. Then there was streaming. And they're like, what do you mean there was a time when you couldn't just watch what you wanted whenever you wanted to? So, oh yeah, you had to look at what you wanted to look at, what you wanted to watch in a book. And then you had to set time aside to be able to watch that thing. And if you missed it, you missed it.
Or if you had a VHS, you could record it.
Yeah, and then at that time, you could schedule when you wanted to watch TV. But before then, you'd miss it.
Mm.
Now, you can just do what the hell ever you want. Sorry, yeah. I cut you off though. What
I can't remember what I was going to say. But you can go and you know, you buy, if you wanted to watch, because also BBC now say, come and watch the box set on BBC iPlayer. It's like, that's not a box set. A box set was a box with loads of DVDs or VHSs.
Yeah. Do you just love the way we've changed all of the words? Like, the meanings of everything have just completely been, it's still a box set. It's like,
That's just words. I mean, a lot of words we use now are meaningless. With the fact that we say, I'm going to go watch a film.
It's not a film.
No, you're not watching a film. Or, send me that video. Well, video, was it what it used to be?
Video
is Latin to mean to see. But what it actually represents means, like, I like the cut you did of that edit.
There's no actual cut anymore. It's a non-destructive edit.
Yeah. Lots of terminology that we use in day-to-day life is based on something that's long term. I mean, it's no different to phrases and phrases and sayings So, which are
like
based
how
on...
meanings change over time, and once upon a time it's perfectly normal, and now it means something completely different.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's...
just randomly speaking of film, by the way, film and digital, could I recommend a film documentary dealio with a Scott Keanu Reeves in it? I can't remember if he narrates
Matrix.
It. Ha, ah, no.
Johnny Mnemonic.
Side by Side. Story of celluloid film through to digital.
I should put a link. I'll put a link in the show notes.
See, I completely forgot about that film. I watched it years and years and years and years ago, and recently, because I've mentioned like on nearly every podcast since Christmas that my kids have had iPads, and I logged into like iTunes to see like, oh, hey, what have I bought in like iTunes? Because I haven't used Apple products in ages, and I haven't used iTunes in ages. And there it was, side by side with Keanu Reeves. And I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to sit down and watch that. I completely forgot that's a really, really awesome film.
Mm.
So, yeah. That's part of the joys of digital. You completely forget it even exists until you go back, and if it's still on the server, you can have it.
Yeah, that is one of the joys. And it is. It's wonderful being able to just go back and watch stuff and stuff and just sort of have access to whatever you want. It is best that you can have. You can just watch whatever you want whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But as you say,
you don't just have enough space. Kind of like when you say there isn't enough money to represent, you know, that there isn't enough space for you to have every film you could ever possibly want to own. Whereas digital, you actually have a chance.
No, I mean, you always see, like, we've all known that person who had like a room and it was just wall to wall filled with shelves filled with VHSs or DVDs.
Oh, mate, that would have been my dream. If you said to me, right, if I could have, you know, there's a vicarage not too far away from my house. I got bought up by a couple. If I could have had that, I would have had a room just for film. I would have had a room for books. I would have had a room for music, and I would have covered it floor to ceiling. All the walls, books, CDs, whatever. That would have been my dream years and years ago.
Mm.
And now I sit in it, like, because I would never have the space for it. Like, in my house, I barely have the space for a desk.
Yeah.
So the idea of actually having a collection of physical music or big old beefy shelves full of books and stuff is just not going to happen.
Mm.
It's just, it'd be fantastic.
I can't remember the last time I actually ever, used physical media. When was that?
You got a book the other week. I was there.
Oh, books. Books I have fairly often. Books. Alright, so disregarding books, I prefer books to digital stuff because, just conveniently, I have the D&D Player's Handbook sat next to me.
As you do.
And if I want to look something up, it's so much easier just to have it open on the bloody page rather than on the web browser and just scroll through it.
Yeah.
It's so much easier. For example, on the adventuring gear page with a very angry elf. Physical meaning like video and like sort of DVDs or VHSs. I've we ain't got a VHS player anymore. Haven't had one of those for years.
Sad, really.
Yeah. DVDs. The last DVD I watched would have been Neverwhere, which we discussed in this podcast about 4 years ago.
Blimey.
That would be the last physical media product, not counting books, physical media product that I watched.
I can't remember mine. Wow.
That's scary, really, isn't it? Remember.
I mean, I know that one of the last physical Blu-rays I bought was probably Last Action Hero. Or Ashen's Quest for the Game Child.
Mm.
But then I've recently bought both of those digitally anyway.
Yeah.
Because I don't have access to like a drive or anything. So why would... Look, I love the idea of just being able to lounge in your on your sofa in front of a big old TV with a nice sound system, which is why I say I'd love to have a room dedicated to all these different types of media, right? Like, so you just sit in the perfect environment to absorb whatever it is that you're trying to absorb. You'll be able to sit on your sofa, put your Blu-ray into your Blu-ray player, have the excellent surround sound, big old screen TV. But I was like, when am I ever going to get the opportunity to actually sit down and consume this content in its, you know, proper environment, in an optimum environment for it? Whereas if I have the digital version, I can just put it on a phone or a tablet, and whilst that's not the best experience, it's good enough. We've become a society of good enough.
I've got my PC. I've got a DVD rewriter.
God, blimey.
I know.
I haven't even got space in mine, mate. That's a front fan.
I've got very big case, and I put it in there because it's one of the things that I thought myself, one day I'm going to want such a DVD, and I'll won't have it and I'll be really annoyed.
Yeah.
I've probably used it twice and I bought this machine back in 2018, I think it was, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I built this machine. I've used it probably twice since then.
So I used to like the idea of burning all of my stuff onto Blu-ray and DVD. So all my film projects and stuff, I would burn the raw footage onto a Blu-ray or a DVD and then do the final cut would be on a Blu-ray or DVD. Not as a video disc, but the actual physical file.
Yeah.
Physical file, sarcastic air quotes. And then, same with other bits so I could kind of archive it. But then over years, I went back to my old kind of project case, pulled out a couple of discs and found that they'd kind of, they're degraded.
Yeah.
So you couldn't use them. I was like, oh my God, what a waste.
Yeah.
Archiving that stuff is a nightmare. And you'd think a DVD, a burnt Blu-ray or disc is going to last a while. It doesn't. Nowhere near as long as a pressed disc or whatever. But even then, they don't last a huge amount of time.
No, I mean, in the case of DVD and Blu-rays, because basically what it's affecting is basically a printed layer.
Yeah.
That is also very much degraded. I mean, a pressed one, is there physical change? Mm-hmm. I mean, also technically, print is technically physical, but it's almost like it's etched in, so they'll be more robust. But
yeah.
Eventually, everything degrades eventually. Nothing lasts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whatever we have now in 1,000 years' time, 99.999% of it will be gone.
Yep.
Because it will have rusted away, degraded, broken down, and there'll be some archaeologist digs out and finds the one pristine Blu-ray disc of one of your films. And they'll say, oh, this must be some wise traveller from the time. You best play it. We'll best find a way to play it. I'll be pulling to Spain, some museum somewhere until someone finds a Blu-ray player, which works. And then someone has to dig through the old coding and find out and manage to reverse engineer the codec so they can actually play it. And they go,
yeah, exactly, because that's all going to fade away, isn't it?
Yeah, and then they find plug-in. We're going to see who this person is. They find it's one of your earliest vlogs from 2002 or something.
That'd be terrifying, mate. That'd be absolutely terrifying. I mean, because I used to really love archiving this stuff, and I am quite envious at times of people who have been able to archive all of their footage and stuff. I know people who have got VHS tapes still of some of their earliest works. It's but I have no idea how they've managed to store it as well as they have over so much time. They've got so much space and so much money that they've been able to do it. I couldn't even dream of it.
Yeah.
Couldn't even dream of it.
Yeah.
You know, the players fail, cables kind of disintegrate, they degrade over time. Lasers fail. I mean, it could just be as simple as a cap going and your entire player's shot. Yeah. If it's got proprietary parts in it that aren't made. Well, look at cassette decks. Nowhere makes cassette decks anymore. I believe there's a Chinese company, but they are so, so terrible that every player you now buy has one of their decks in it. But if you were to listen to a tape, even a really good quality tape, on one of those players, it would sound shite.
Mm.
They don't make the good stuff anymore.
No.
And there will come a time when even that fades away, because that's just a novelty product right now. Same thing with VHS and DVD and all that. Bit rot is a bitch.
Yeah.
You know, you could write to a chip, it will fail. There's nothing you can do about it. Hard drive, you can literally seal it in a case and leave it there. It will fail. There is a part in it that can and will fail. It will dry out or, you know... disk drives, people go, oh yeah, but if it's a disk drive, if you've never used it, it'll be great, it'll be fine. No, it won't. The grease on the rails will dry out and you'll plug it in, turn it on, and all the little plastic gears, and that'll just crack.
Yeah.
It's all kind of...
Even solid state stuff. You'll put it all there, you get a thing, and then some random bit of cosmic background microwave radiation will go and flip a bit.
Yep, and that's
it. That's the bit you need to decode the whole thing.
The head is gone and that'll be steamrolled.
Yeah.
My mate had that with a hard drive the other day. That was chugging along just fine. Just fine. Has been chugging along for years. Right? And then he went to take a bit of data off of it. He thought everything was fine. Bam! It was gone. I was like, yep, happens.
Yep. Said it banged itself. Bang. Yep. And the drive was gone.
Game over, man.
Game over.
Anyway,
should we make a start?
We're
only half hour in. So,
oh, mate.
Skaz, what have you been playing?
Oh, God. I do often wonder if people just tune into the podcast, if they tune into the podcast for the random fluff we spout at the start.
The description of our podcast is Skaz and the Suffolk Ram discuss games. That is the description. But I think
when do we do that?
Usually towards the end of the podcast, and usually in the last 10 minutes.
Oh, mate. I've noticed it's been getting shorter and shorter and shorter. There used to be games we've been playing, stuff we're looking forward to, weird news. And then it became games we've been playing, but we're still using the same amount of time to talk about other stuff.
Yeah. We've had some classics. I remember the one where we spent 45 minutes discussing the current British school system. It's a 3-hour podcast and 2.5 hours of it's us discussing nonsense. We were discussing various cheap shops to buy stuff from.
Because I think we found rights, mate.
Yeah, I think I found a random leaflet in your house of like some cheap stuff. We just discussed what was in the leaflet.
That's the sign of fantastic hosts. We can just give us a tidbit of information. We're gone.
We'll run with it. No matter how inaccurate it is and how much we have to assume about it, we'll run with it.
Just like government, really.
Yeah.
Why aren't we in charge, Ram?
Perhaps there should be a new segment on the podcast. Our fans, or fan, can send in random little anything they want us to discuss. They can send it in and we'll just pick up and we'll just go with it, even if we know nothing about it.
We've been inundated by a leaflet.
Yeah. No matter how random it is, you know, if you want to discuss, like, sort of the current situation of the different types of screws there are on the market. I mean, I still think Torx is the right way to go, but some people might like the Phillips or the flathead. They're idiots, but there we go.
Round off, it's way too easy.
Oh, you got. Oh,
I think it should be illegal to use the wrong screw or the wrong driver in the wrong. Look, seriously,
so you sat there. It's like, oh, I need. This is a crosshead, but I've only got a flathead. And as you insert it, as you start to turn it, the doors get kicked in. The police come running in, saying, "We're charging you with screw crime."
You're damn right. You screwed up, son. You're nicked.
And no, off that's they the go. Problem. You didn't screw up correctly. But it's a Phillips. No, that's a posi drive bit. They're different.
No. But, oh,
yes, you can tell by the screw head. It's got those extra lines on it. I didn't know that. Well, tough. Ignorance is no excuse to the law, sonny. You're going down.
And if I were ever put in power, I would. And we will not admit, I'm not going to admit to any of the times that I have used the wrong bit in the wrong fucking.
Yeah. And we'll also make it by law that every piece of flat pack furniture will use the same size Allen key.
That would be nice.
Not some random one that's like, this one uses a 1.26785mm Allen key, which will not fit anything else.
Exclusive to this kit. Only available in this kit. It's the one bit that's missing.
Yeah. What? Limited edition Allen key for this set.
Could you imagine it being sold on eBay? 30 grand. Now yeah. You can finally finish off that £25 IKEA shelf. Sorry, games
anyway,
we've been playing. Right. So, I've been going through the Neptunia series and... Oh my, I'm still going.
You like still to punish going. Yourself, don't you, Skaz?
Oh yeah, Neptunia 2 was... That was a cringe fest. Mechanically, it was fine, but story-wise, it was a cringe fest. Neptunia 3... It's considerably less cringy, depending on where you draw the line of cringe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so before, it was a bit, you know... Too much kind of boobage talk, people licking 10-year-olds, that kind of stuff. Just not great, right? And all the villains in that game sucked a big one. They were terrible.
Is this another? Is this another remaster, like rebirthy thing?
Rebirth is Hyperdimension Neptunia Victory or three Victory? I don't remember, but the third one, the Rebirth series is the portable version, but then the portable version got put on PC, so you know it still plays exactly like the bloody Vita version. Like the graphics haven't gone up or anything like that. These are ancient, by the way. Rebirth 3 came out in 2015 and had a DLC update in 2019, I believe.
Right.
Because as they released new Neptunia games and released new characters, they actually put those new characters in the old games as DLC.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in Neptunia, I think this Neptunia 4, its main character is Uzume, who's a Dreamcast. She represents Dreamcast. They put her all the way back in Rebirth 1. Very handy character to use in Rebirth 1, by the way, just throwing that out there. But... yeah, it's
is that the version you're playing at the moment, the Rebirth versions?
Yeah, I'm playing Rebirth 3, because I don't have access to my PlayStation 3 at the moment, so I do tend to play all the Rebirth ones at the moment. As I said in the last episode, I played most of them on GOG, and I just, you know, I'm going to go through them on Steam, because I have the rest of the series on Steam, so I have Rebirth 1, 2, and 3 on pretty much every platform they've ever been released on. And then... the rest of the games all went from, like, they were on PlayStation 4, and then a lot of PlayStation 4 games came out on PC, and I was like, I'm just, instead of having to have like three different systems to play this one series, I'm just going to buy them all on PC. PC for the win. And so we went through Rebirth 1. I went through Reverse 1, or Reverse, which was the remake of Neptunia Rebirth, which was the remake of Neptunia 1. Then I went through Rebirth 1, the last kind of half of it on stream, on PC. Yeah, Rebirth 1 on PC. Then went to Rebirth 2 on PC. We're now on Rebirth 3. And right. So Rebirth 3 takes place in another dimension.
Okay.
Some random fluff goes the down, and the main character, Neptune, is dealing with like a civil rights group. And they're basically trying to say how the console patron units, the CPUs, the goddesses of the game industry, just they need to go the fuck away. And that we don't want them. And all of a sudden, somehow, this being gives the head of that organization the power to do something. Well, initially, she just tears a hole in reality and sends Neptune to another dimension. And in this other dimension... Neptune isn't a CPU. She actually goes back to a time before any of the other kingdoms have been established. So it's just literally, I think when you get down there, Louis, so Nintendo is there, and Planet Neptune has just been formed by its just recently born console patron unit. And so that's the very early days of the console wars. After the video game crash. So this game takes place after the American video game crash of the 1980s.
Mm.
Just after.
Which America thinks happens to the whole world, but...
yeah, well, that's it. And it's funny, actually, because it's told from the side of like, the Japanese. Because obviously in Japan, they didn't have a video game crash.
No.
And we didn't have a video game crash. It was only in America. So it's kind of goofy. And... so there's this new organization of villains, the Seven Sages, who are terrible, absolutely terrible. I can never remember any of their names. There's like the stupid Pikachu knockoff Wehrchu from Rebirth 2, who falls in love with the nurse, is in it. Copy Paste, who's this big robot who just shouts all the time. Mr. Bad, who's just like your typical business executive, fiddling things behind the scenes, you know, shifting money around and all that kind of stuff. Abnus, who's like an idol, protecting children's rights or something. Anona Death, who's like a hacker or something. Ray Wrights, who's the head of the organization. And fuck me, I forgot someone. Oh, R4! Oh my god, how could I forget R4? who's basically the piracy groove. So they've recycled some of the villains from the previous games, and sadly, the worst ones. Some of the characters, some of the villains in this one are actually pretty solid, and None of Death's pretty cool. The hacker. Mr. Bad is terrible all the way up until the end. Copy-paste is terrible all the way up until the end. Virtue is never any good. But either way, in the other dimension, again, they're trying to get rid of the console patron units. And basically, the story revolves around stopping them from doing their thing and getting Neptune back to the other dimension. The bit where this game's a bit on the cringy side, though, is so where, as I say, you had the really dodgy, not great characters, like the mouse perving over the woman and the this big hulking geezer perving over children. This one, well, like I said, it's less cringy as long as you don't mind sadists. And she will literally, the console patron unit of Planeptune isn't Neptune, it's Plutia, based on the Sega Pluto. And when she transforms, she's a sadist. So she goes around punishing people and tormenting people and all that kind of stuff. In fact, people are so scared of her, they tell her not to transform. They do everything they can not to keep her in her normal human form. It's fantastic. Oh. It's considerably less cringy than Rebirth 2. It really is. Anyway, story aside, it's something you have to play for yourself, because if I start telling too much of the fluff, you'll be like, oh, well, that was kind of obvious. They have changed some bits mechanically. So in Rebirth 1 and Rebirth 2, you had a magic meter and you had a special meter. They weren't tied together. So you could literally spam your magic, and then you'd have, as a kind of your last resort, your hardcore special abilities. In Rebirth 3, they've tied those two bloody numbers together. And it's a nightmare.
How's that actually then work when you're doing it?
So it's kind of like when you played Final Fantasy VII, you've got your regular magic and then you've got your big materia summons and stuff. Yeah. Right, so your materia summons are considered your specials. Although I suppose you have limit breaks too. The specials used to be considered like limit breaks in Neptunia. But now they're kind of tied into the same system as, say, there'd be a special in the same way that a materia summon would be in what's it called? So you'll have, the best way to describe it is in bars. You start with 4 bars of special points. Mm-hmm. Now, using low-level magic skills isn't necessarily going to use an entire bar. It will use like a percentage of that grid. So if it's 100 points per grid and you use 20, then you'll use a tiny slither. But because they haven't actually, the amount that you're going to actually use early on is related quite closely to the size of the squares. Mm-hmm. But as you go further through, the amount of the square that gets used is less and less as the number that each square represents goes up and up and up. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I feel what you mean.
But when you use a special that is directly tied to the squares. So if I have 4 squares and then I use 1 magic ability, so that'll bring me three squares and, you know, right the way up to the end of the 4th square, but not quite. I can't use my 4 square ability at all. And I might not have a 3 square ability or a 2 square ability. So I can't use the special. And if I do use the special, that will then completely nuke my ability to transform into the higher power forms, because that uses magic or SP. And I can't use, say, healing magic or attack magic, because, again, that is tied into the SP. So whereas before, you could use them as almost like insurance policies. Like if you're about to get wrecked, you'd still have access to magic or a special. Now you have to kind of micromanage what you use.
Yeah.
And While someone will say, but that's kind of normal for every other game under the sun. Yes, but it's not something that I've ever really had to worry about in a Neptunia game. So after playing them through in sequence, it's really screwed with my brain to then have to start micromanaging SP. Whereas before I could just go, right, I've still got 4 bars in my super special gauge, and that will transfer to the next fight, the next fight, the next fight. But I've only got a little bit of magic left. That doesn't matter because I can just steamroll my enemy. Now I'm like, okay, I need to sort out my SP. Or I'm out of SP. I can't use special abilities. I can't use magic. If I do use a special ability and that nukes all of my SP, I can't use magic to heal or buff anyone or transform or whatever. So you can find yourself in a right nasty position quite early on. Also, SP is recovered by using rush abilities, so that's your triangle attack, but you only get a little bit back per rush attack. You can use items to give SP back, but those are really expensive. Or you can develop game discs, which could maybe give you a little bit of SP back per turn. Like you can get like an SP regen buff. So you'll get a little bit back per turn or maybe a little bit back after a victory or something like that. But SP, I've found up until quite late in the game, it's a nightmare. It's quite brutal. They also have another mechanic in the game now whereby if you, say, jump, it will count that you've jumped. And if, say, you jump 100 times, you'll go, your agility is now leveled up by plus 1 point. Or you go into battle, you've hit an enemy with standard attacks 100 times, plus 1 on strength. Or you've been hit for 10,000 points of damage. Here's this. And if you do that enough for each thing, you know, health, agility, and all that kind of stuff, you can unlock special plans which you can develop to, say, give you extra health boosts, extra SP regen, more SP, faster movement speed, quicker recovery in battle, that kind of stuff. But if you don't use certain characters, you'll find that later on when you need them, they can be massively underpowered because their skills aren't tied to their level, but the amount of other things that they've used in battle before.
So your character sort of switch between fairly regularly to keep balance or have a core group that you never produce and you never use the others.
But you say use the core group. That's usually my strat. However, Neptunia games have this knack of going, right, well, you've got used to using, say, Neptune, Blan, Vert, and Noir. Well, in this chapter, Vert and Noir have just gone. They've gone off to do something else. Good luck. And it's like, oh, crap, my strat has just completely fallen apart. And then they might come back a chapter later, and then all of a sudden one of the other mainstays of your team has gone. Like, I've had that before. Like, oh, look, my DPS is just up and fucked off, or my support character is just up and fucked off. Now, if you've got DLC characters, that's not too much of a problem. But if the story ever requires you to use one of these other characters, you are shite out of luck if you haven't developed them. So the prime example of this, and one that I was like, hang on a minute, I'm level God knows what right now, a really high level. Where the hell are my EXE drives, the super specials? I've got these coupling abilities. So I don't think I've mentioned these before. Coupling abilities are based on the idea that you have front and back characters. Front characters are the ones that start on the battlefield. Back characters are characters that you can switch out to. Okay? So, if a character dies or if you find that they're not effective, you can hit a button and that'll go, okay, we'll switch that character out. That character loses a turn but flips to the other person that's in your squad. So you can have effectively 8 players in battle at a time. Right? If you have certain characters coupled with other characters, so they have either have to be on the same line in the front row, or if, say, Neptune and Nepgear have a special combo attack together, if Neptune's at the front or Pluto's at the front and Neptune's at the back or Pluto's at the back, they have to be coupled, right? They have to be on the same line. They can use a special attack. All of those coupling abilities were available. They started to become available as characters started to get unlocked. But I was like, where are the EXE drives, the special abilities that normally fall under this same category? Where, like, I don't understand. Where are they? And because I don't often check plans in Neptunia games. Plans are the items that you can develop, unless I really need to. And there was a new page that had character listings in it. I was like, what are these? Only to find my special moves were unlockable plans that were based on how many times I'd used other skills in battle. So if I hadn't used a character's special abilities in game, like magic abilities in fights, they never got their EXE drives, their full power specials.
Annoying.
And in the case of some characters, I got right to the end of the game and they didn't have their special moves. Like, some of the end fights got really difficult because I was like, how am... Because bosses tend to regenerate health over time as well, like per turn. And I was like, I can't DPS these guys down fast enough with these regular attacks to get past their regen ability. And so I ended up having to take... I did, I think, two streams of the game where I spent 4 to 8 hours grinding with other members of my team so that they could unlock their special abilities. So not only did I have to... So to make a plan... So to unlock the plan, for example, for EXE Drive, you had to go into battle and use 100 special abilities. That can take quite some time. That can be a special attack. That can be a health regen, that can be a buff, debuff, whatever. It doesn't matter as long as you're using a special skill.
Yeah.
After you get the plan for the special move, you then have to go and find the item that is required to make the plan to apply it to the character.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have to go and grind another area for items to complete the plans so you can have the thing. That really, really, really threw me off. Initially, I thought it was cool. Like, oh, hey, the characters change based on how you use them and stuff. But when I realized the EXE drives and stuff were linked to stuff like that, I was like, oh, mate. Because before, it'd be, oh, yeah, unlock your EXE drive at level 35. And I'm like, hang on, I'm like level 50 at the minute, level 60. Where the hell are my special moves? You don't get them that way. Yeah. And because I'd only used like 4 characters the entire time up to this point, majority of my characters were then really, really weak. Because they didn't have any of the buffs made by plans. This is also one of the first Neptunia Rebirth games that kind of pushes chapter quests on you. So like chapter progression quests. In the last 2 Rebirth games, they mention that if you go to a guild hall and pick up quests, some of the quests can only be done on that chapter. Or are needed to be completed to progress the chapter. But the previous 2 games didn't have chapter quests. Not that I've seen, not that I remember. But in Neptunia 3, they turn up regularly. And I was like, huh, that's funny. They've mentioned them in the previous 2 games, but I've never seen them. Yet here they are now. So, you know, just figured I'd toss that one out there. And there was also there's a game-breaking bug on the PC version.
Mm-hmm.
So towards chapter 8, you complete a boss fight, and during one of the cutscenes, it's not a video cutscene, it's just a regular dialogue cutscene, like visual novel style-y. Character 1, character 2, text on the bottom, music plays, background image. During one of those cutscenes, every single time, same place, it will just go, fail, game over. Like, not game over, but it will come up with the old Windows error message, XYZ game has crashed, sorry.
Oh.
And you can relaunch it, and then the thing is, this cutscene takes place after 2 consecutive boss fights.
Ah. Oh.
So you'll then have to go back in, do the boss fights, and then the game likely crashes again. And what it turns out is this one particular cutscene, and it's the only one that I found that does it, uses more than 2 gigabytes of RAM. 2 gigs of RAM in 2021? Yes. 2 gigs of RAM in 2015? Yeah. So that shouldn't really be an issue, right?
No.
Well, the EXE is limited to 2 gigs of RAM.
Oh.
So you have to patch the executable to allow it to use more RAM so that you can actually get past this cutscene. If not, the game is completely broken.
There's going to be a lot of annoyed people out there who won't... Because if you're not savvy enough to look that up, there's going to be a lot of people there who aren't going to get past that cutscene.
For sure. I mean, because like I say, I did one stream where I got to that fight and did it.
This is done through Steam?
Yes.
And they've not, and the developers have not patched it?
Nope.
Awesome.
Yeah, I thought that was bizarre. Like, they've released DLC, I believe they released DLC back in 2019, I think. But they still haven't patched this one bug that's likely been there since dot one. Thankfully, it's a simple fix. Someone has actually made a tool to... You can either patch it yourself or someone has made a tool where you can just click it and run it on the executable and it'll edit the values to do whatever it needs to do to access more RAM. But the idea that they haven't done that themselves is mind-boggling. The fact that you actually have to get through majority of the game too before that error kicks in. I don't know, maybe just because the Vita didn't have a huge amount of RAM, so it wasn't a problem there. But then why are we using more RAM now? I don't know. So there was that. I actually did two streams where at the end of one stream I'd done those two boss fights and it failed. And I was like, well, fuck it, I'm not doing those two fights again to see if it crashes. Next day I did another stream where I was like, say, leveling up my characters and stuff to make that fight a bit easier because I didn't want to... I really slogged through one of these fights because, as I said, I didn't have any of my EXE drives or anything like that. And got through the fight again, and then it crashed again. I was like, huh, I wonder if this is a problem with my laptop. So my laptop has got a dual GPU set up in it, and Neptunia didn't like being streamed off of my laptop. Neptunia Rebirth 2 and 3 wouldn't use the game capture method where it hooks into the buffer of the GPU. Mm-hmm. And that's usually an issue on Optimus-based machines where you've got a low-power graphics card and a high-power graphics card. Neptunia 1 was brutal for this, by the way, back in the day until they patched it all up, where, say, cutscenes would run on an Intel graphics card, like your Intel processor's GPU, and then the actual gameplay itself would run on the like your NVIDIA or your AMD card.
Yeah.
So I've got the same kind of groove in my laptop. I was like, oh, please don't tell me, even though I've told it to run on the big boy card, some things do just outright ignore where you tell them to go. So you had to use window capture. I was like, please don't tell me this bug is because of that. So I went over to my PC, fired up my PC for the first time in months, installed it on the PC and still had the same issue. And that's when I then ran into the idea that it was a RAM issue, but that was really, really, really weird.
Yeah.
And why it would still have issues with Optimus-based machines all these years in the future when Neptunia 1 doesn't is a bit beyond me. Maybe people don't kind of go from Neptunia 1, 2, 3, they get to like 2 and they cringe themselves into submission.
No one's really going to play this through, so let's not bother.
That was it. I was just like, yeah. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong, Neptunia 3 has got a lot of cringe moments in it, and every time Plutia transforms into the characters all call her Sadie, because she's just the hardcore sadist. I mean, she is literally dressed like a dominatrix, whip the lot. And she fucking enjoys tormenting absolutely everyone. the cringe can be... real, so I guess a lot of people just don't get that far. Yeah. So I mean, I know for a fact, like, I think Zabra has seen him, he outright said no, just because, like, it's anime based. A load of other people I know who have watched my streams have said I wouldn't play that because it's anime based, that would be so embarrassing. I was like, it's a game, get over it, you know. It's like saying, oh, yeah, I won't play that, but I'll happily play like Mortal Kombat or Postal or. or something like that. You've drawn a line in a really weird place. But yeah, they hadn't fixed it. It's kind of sad, really, because 3 is a pretty good game. Mm. It is a pretty good game. Music's fantastic, albeit really out of place. So, like, battle music doesn't seem to fit in a lot of cases because it's just like the regular character themes from other games. But then they have other remix themes that just sound fantastic. Mm. So, yeah. Rebirth 3, really, really, really fun. And it's the introduction to another set of CPUs. There's still plenty of boobage references and all that kind of
it's
stuff.
Is Thunder Tits still in it? Or Thunder the Tits. Line? The line.
Yeah. So that's Blan ripping into Vert, who's the Xbox. So that's the Nintendo versus Xbox or Microsoft. Because Blan is flat chested. It's funny, actually, because Blan represents Nintendo, who's supposed to be kiddie friendly.
Yeah.
But she is the most foul-mouthed, vicious character of the lot. Like, she'll call people pissants and fucking call them bitches and all that kind of stuff. And yet she's supposed to be really family-friendly. And then you have Vert, who's Microsoft, she's like this prim and proper kind of like posh lady. Well, kind of, except she loves BL games and drinking tea and playing video games all night. You'd really get on with her, Ram. She just sits there and plays video games like all night. That's great.
Yeah, sounds like it.
She's a fantastic character. I love all the characters in that game because they're so fucking stupid. But yeah, that kind of stuff is in it. And there's actually a character that makes Vert feel uncomfortable when it comes to the boobage size too. So there's loads of jokes about that too. Like, oh, now you know how it feels and all that kind of stuff. And Blan starts flipping the fuck out and all that stuff, all the goofy humor is still in it. I kind of wanted to go into Neptunia 4 directly after, but I thought, no, I'm going to play something else. But I'll let you go. So the Neptunia series, fun to play. Don't let the fact that they're anime games kind of creep you out. They're really neat, goofy explanations of video game history and different events in gaming history. And as I say, 3, because it takes place back in the time, all the way from the NES up until, I believe, the Nintendo Wii, they do kind of mention a lot of the old video game crash, consoles that never came out, different console flops that happened and why they happened. But they tell video game history in a really goofy, cheesy, fun way. So for people who weren't born back then, who didn't know about the NES and the Sega Mega Drive and stuff like that, and don't get me wrong, most kids do, It's a nice way to introduce people to other things or to introduce, you know, kids these days into that history. Oh, well, I was only born when like the Xbox came out or whatever. Well, play this game and it'll tell you about all the other stuff too. You know, Atari, PC Engine, they've got a PC game and Continent 2, Nintendo's history loosely.
Please tell me the PC game content's RGB colored.
It's. I didn't unlock anything on the island.
It changes colour every few seconds, you know, and gradually cycles through it.
I didn't unlock anything on the island, but it would have been funny if it was.
Yeah. There's a massive, massive fan in the middle of it cooling everything down.
It's like one of the biggest islands, and it's just got a massive fucking PC on it. So, you know, yeah. It's fun. I like the series. They're goofy, and I just like the way they explain things and... There's plenty of fucking cheese in it. Some of it's absolutely terrible, but it's you got to do it. You got to play it. So what have you been playing, Ram?
Well, I have been playing... I've been visiting 1980 Sweden.
Oh, God.
In Generation Zero.
Right.
So I wanted... I got into a very weird way. I got into Generation Zero. I was... I talked about a game a while back called The Light That Keeps Us Safe, which was made by developers who made, say, Being Hunted, Signal from Tolva. They made a light that keeps us safe, and they seemed to like vanish into the ether. They finished it, but they like it had some bugs. It's like where they basically said we're not going to fix it, and they sort of disappeared.
Yeah, I remember you saying,
real disappointment, real letdown. You know, I bought it early because I like the developers, I like to support them, and I felt very let down by it all. And I was looking at it, and I was going through, I was like seeing if anything, like by miracle, they'd decided anything with it. they want discussion forums, and someone mentioned, well, if you like this game, you might want to look at Generation Zero. It's a game similar sort of idea where you're sort of having to hide from robots and stuff and sort of fight your way through. So I thought, fair enough, I'll give that a go. Picked up and loaded up. So it's a survival game. You are a... The backstory is, I think it's set in 1989, I think, if I remember correctly, or 1987, something like the late 80s. And you are a student, a teenager, who's been away on like a trip, and when you get back home to your sort of little part of Sweden, the village you're in is all everybody's deserted, everybody's gone, but there's these robots sort of roaming the landscapes, or hostile robots. And it's a survival game, but it's quite heavily put into the sort of shooter mold. Within like the first 5 minutes, I had a pistol and like 200 rounds of ammunition. And I went. And literally, in the first sort of like, if you follow the first sort of like progression through the story mode, like mission number, like sort of like part three of the first mission is kill something, kill an enemy. So it heavily pushes you towards shooting. And the first time I encountered the robots and it shot me, it's like, fucking hell, it took my health out. So I ran back to the house and sort of, let me go from where I started. So I landed in this place, found a house, found a gun, house deserted, started looking around, found some cars with some bits and pieces in it. Quite nice, you can open all the doors of the cars, you can open the bonnets up and like take bits out of the engine and sort of like recover parts and so forth. It's got crafting in it, as you would expect. And then 5 foot off, a mid robot shoots me, does a lot of damage. I think, fuck me, these hurt. And sort of like immediately sort of ran back to the house to sort of take cover. And I sat, and this is when I first discovered, one of the first things I started to suspect, and I've now confirmed. The robot AI is pretty stupid. The first time you meet them and they shoot you and you get hurt and you take injury and what have you, they do quite a lot. They do a fair amount of damage. They get a good shot at you. However, they all seem to follow the same pattern of bang, 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 wait. Bang, 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 wait. And they just do that same pattern.
Yeah.
And as soon as you figure that out, they're very easy to defeat because you're just like, well, I'll just hide behind a tree then. Oh, they stop throwing. Take three shots.
You've got a chance to jump out and okay.
Yeah. So first of all, I didn't know how deadly they were or how bad they were. So I retreated back into this house and I sat there with a gun at the door. And I'm sort of finding this sort of like, because it's got fantastic atmosphere. It's very stalkerish atmosphere. If you ever played Stalk, it's a very similar atmosphere to that, although less, like, where Stalker's in a world where everything's all falling apart, because, like, the zone's been abandoned.
Yeah.
Everything's only just been abandoned, so everything's sort of new and stuff, but has it sort of similar sort of graphical style. So I'm sat there, sort of waiting at the door of this building, waiting for him to come around, and I could hear him shoot inside the building, but he never moves, he never comes forward, never comes to try and find me. So I ended up having to sort of, like, go out myself and find him and shoot him and finish him off. And the first thing you finish it fine, you think they're quite tough. Once you get a bit later on, you realise, actually, no, they're very easy. They are, even the big ones, actually not that hard to kill. And this is where my sort of initial problem started to come with it. Was like, I was expecting survival game. I was expecting it to be more, I suppose perhaps because I've sort of gotten into the green hell mindset of everything is just deadly. You know, you step on a trench and you're dead.
Yeah, sure.
I sort of wanted a fight between a robot should be life and death. It should be like having to think about, having to sort of time, having to get the shots off and so forth. There were so many med kits. I think with like the first all night play, I had like 25 med kits.
So it's not regen health then, like most other.
No, regen health. You have to have med kits, which I prefer. I prefer the non regening health. I prefer that.
I agree. From time to time.
Yeah, it suits certain games, different courses, but you have to heal up. But there's so many med kits around, that's not really a problem. So once you realise that, and the robots, and also I've learned, the robots will not go in buildings. They refuse to. They will come to the door, but they will not come into a building. I've tried.
Is there any particular story reason as to why, or just can they not get through?
Not that I've found out. sometimes you'll find robots in buildings if they've been put there by the developers, but they rule not come into a building. I've never managed to lure into a building because there's lots of, and buildings are like effectively bulletproof. So the amount of times like, oh, there's about 20 robots here. That's fine. There's a small wooden shed over there. I'll go in there, sit in there, and I'll just pop out, shoot it through every time, just keep docking back in and out, in and out, in and out, and I'll be fine. They'll come to the door, but they won't come in. So you're safe. Even at the, you're not... Freya, once you realise that, once I saw Trig, that like, that's like my sort of second session I Trig, thought, they won't come into
it
the buildings.
It breaks the game for you, I suppose.
Yeah, they're not threatening anymore. And this is my sort of like disappointment, that the robots aren't scary. The game is obviously very much hinting towards of, oh, we want you to kill loads of them. And you will like count, they'll like shoot you, you'll come in there and there'll be like sort of a dozen of them. There's like little, like, they've only got little, what they call little ticks, or a little like four legged sort of like ones that will jump at you. You don't count very much outside, you don't often count those outside. The one you count quite a lot are called runners, which look like little, like sort of like spot minis, the little Boston Dynamics dog. Imagine one of those, a machine gun.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll find those in fairly big groups. They're quite quick and so forth. But even they aren't, you can sort of like, get a few short. Well, it's honestly, because they will not. When they're sort of like in their little cool down bit where they're not firing at you, they tend to just stand there. So you can just go and just run at them and shoot them and they won't do anything. And it's like, I think to myself, these aren't sort of an intelligent enemy I'm facing. I was hoping it was going to be more along the lines of. Take Greenhouse as an example. When you heard something nearby that was nasty, you tended to think, I'm going to be very careful here because I could be really fucked up really quickly. Unless you're really confident you were, like, you know, had all the gear and stuff, you could go and take him out. And as you also got later on, you got the better hours and so forth. The robots in this, in my opinion, should be fairly deadly. You know, I want to be like almost two shits, I'm nearly dead, and not many health kits, so you have to take each one trying. You have to like almost ambush them and so forth. So once that's all gone, the sort of fear of them is gone, so you just sort of find yourself wandering around, building and so forth. So, yeah, I just didn't find it. Once at that point, I was like, these aren't really scary anymore. I'm not worried about them anymore. Even like when I came across one of the big ones, there's I've had the ticks of the runners. This one's called Hunters. When I sort of first came up with those, I thought, right, I'm going to be a bit more cautious again, take my time again, sort of get an idea, sort of like take shits off. I saw Sean a couple of times and he was like, oh shit, there is. He started firing. I mean, the Hunters are quite, I've got pretty, they've got like sort of big machine guns and they can also fire like gas missiles at you to sort of like gas the area you're in.
All right.
But then again, I quickly ran and hid in a building. And once again, he basically walked to the other side of the building. He's like, just stood there in the distance. He knew I was in the building and just didn't do anything. Just stood there in the open and didn't do anything. They were just really, they're just really stupid. And it's like, I'm not worried about this anymore. I'm not concerned about these. This is not kind of what I was expecting. I just want to be a bit tougher. As it was so much health around, so it's not easy, but so it's got your other sort of things. You've got like crafting as well, so you'll find stuff and you can like dismantle equipment. There's like when you find like sort of safe houses, you can dismantle equipment at the safe houses. You can recycle stuff, which basically turns into like raw materials. What's nice is you can like store the raw materials in like sort of the workbench type thing. And it's always, where you go to your workbench, it's like shares the resource, so they're always accessible.
All right.
And also at their safe houses is there's like crates. And whatever you put in that crate is accessible at all the other safe houses.
Mm-hmm.
So again, there's no, okay, I need to go back to that safe house, that's where I've left this gear. Or I need to pick and be very careful what I take with me. It's like, well, it's okay, I can dump it here. If I need to, I'm near another safe house, and I'll go there and pick it up. So you can't do crafting. I've not done really any crafting. I've only really got unlocked a couple of crafting somewhere. So they're both for clothes, which I don't really need. I found some bare weapons and some tougher weapons. What you got? Like, I mean, I've got an assault rifle now. And now those little hunter robots are like, just piss easy. And now I've learned that they've got like their little power cell on top. So it's almost like a headshot, but like you can, if you hit that power cell, it's basically them instantly dead for them. Well, it's very easy with the assault rifle because it rides up slightly. You just aim sort of roughly at the head. If you aim it sort of like slightly at the head or at the power cell, slightly below it, as you ride up, you almost certainly hit it and take him out.
Sure.
So it's become incredibly easy to defeat them, and it's just, they're just not threatening anymore. Which is a real shame, because from the first night I played it, I was really enjoying it, because it was like, I was taking my time, being cautious, avoiding the big groups and so forth, because I'm like, oh, these guys, they seem quite deadly. Then as I've sort of learned what their abilities are, what their sort of boundaries are, it's become easy.
You realised how the game worked and it broke it. I mean, one of the old gaming, you know, the gamer's groove is learn the pattern, find the pattern. But sometimes I find that when you find a pattern, you ruin games for yourself.
Yeah.
Because it takes you out of that world, because you're like, well, if I just wait for it to do this and that and whatever, then this will happen and I can do that. And then you end up getting into a pattern yourself, where you just abuse, say, a couple of skills or... And it becomes like, people go, oh, the game's really boring. It's like, yeah, but you made it boring.
Yeah. I mean, if they just took the Rebel Satan, just did things like, you know, took cover.
Yeah.
They just stand out in the open. If they did so I don't mind games where you start where you can get powerful. I've got powerful too quick.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm only like, I've sort of found myself doing sort of like hours. I've played literally about, I'm still on the first hour, I'm literally about sort of 6 hours in. I'm already feeling like I'm overpowered.
Sure.
I've sort of done a bit more looking at it online, and from what I've read, it's designed with co-op in mind, and apparently it's a lot better with co-op. I can see that, because there's no extra stuff put in it when you're co-op. So the health kits would be split between 3 or 4 people.
Oh, okay, sure. Now, well, that makes sense.
Now I can see, because often you will find, because 4 people is the maximum people, often you find health kits and packs in sets of 4. You'll find 4 laying around.
Sure.
So I can actually see that now. Actually, I thought maybe with a group of people, ammunition becomes more scarce, because you have to share between 4 people. Mm-hmm. So you have weapons and so forth. A lot of people are saying, yeah, it's not very good in single player playing groups. So I wonder if it might be worth for us to do at some point in the future and just give it a go as a group, see if we find it better.
Add it to the list.
I'll add it to the list. I mean, the atmosphere is fantastic. I like the robot designs. They are sort of like, they look of the time. They look like sort of sleek. They look like big and clunky and chunky. They look very 80s at the time. Sure. I do quite like it. I want to really like it, but I just can't go over how easy it is.
Yeah. Is it realistically going to get any harder, though, if you've got 4 people running around steamrolling stuff?
Well, from what I've read, people say you have more of a blast with co-op.
It's just more fun, because you're tearing through them rather than stealthing about as much and hiding and popping out.
And yes, in theory, if you have got your resources are split between, when you've got like 25 health kits, you're not worried going out toe to toe with them, because you've got plenty of health kits. You can just quickly delve my health kit, just heal yourself up, and you're fine. When that's split between more people and you can't share, and you can't sort of easy share, and then I could see them being more of a, you'd be a bit more cautious.
Yeah,
I could see that. So that's just what I've read. So it might be worth one to try. I don't know if there's a way to. I'm having another look, because I sort of started the game. I don't recall ever asking me for a difficulty level. I wonder if there's a way you can up the difficulty a bit, maybe.
Hmm.
So, I mean, the first sort of like couple hours of gameplay, you find a sniper rifle. So,
wow.
Yeah, I think they've got the balance wrong. I mean, it could just be my preconceptions. I was going to thinking more Green Hell style difficulty.
Yeah.
And I got more like a shooter style difficulty.
Yeah.
They call it a survival game, but, you know, there's no real resource you have to worry about. There's no food to worry about.
It's survival in the case that you are trying to get from point A to point B alive, which is pretty much every game under the sun, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Call of Duty survival.
Yeah, it's more of a shooter, and, you know, it's got fast travel to the bases in it. So once you've got a base, you've got fast travel, so you just fast travel between the bases. It's like, that sort of feels like it ruins the point.
Yeah.
So
the risk is in the journey.
Yes, yeah. And I mean,
the fun is in the risk of the journey.
What I wanted it to be, and in my head, is what I wanted it to be, and it's not, is like, you're wandering around the thing, you're your mates, and you see a place with like three robots patrolling around. You think, can we take them? There could be some goodies in there. And your risk reward, is it worth the take? Is it worth reducing injuries and so forth? And you sort of make a plan up, and you go and you assault, and you get the robots out, and you find some good, you might find some crap gear and think that was a waste of time, or some good gear and go, yeah. Or you'll come across like a patrol of robots wandering through the undergrowth, and it's like, right, we'll just not bother going taking them. Or perhaps, you know, one carries some vital components, so you decide to set an ambush up, so you plan an ambush and you're going to groom. That's sort of what I wanted. That's not what I got. And that's probably sure. Sort of, I mean, I want to say that's what I wanted. I didn't like assume that's how it was going to be when I went in, but I saw like, if I'd done it, this is how I would have done it.
Yeah.
Make the players think about what they want to do. Make them think, is it worth doing it? Like I say, there's a first add on, you go to like a sports field, and there's loads of, there must be a dozen robots patrolling it. And I was just running around with the gun, docking out, shooting, because as long as you listen to that da-da-da-da-da break, you know you've got like 3 seconds.
Yeah, that's quite a long time, dude.
It feels like a long time. It does feel like a really long time. It's too long.
Do you think that perhaps, as you said, the buildings are bulletproof because you were in the building, out the building, in the building, out the building, pop in, shoot, you know, pop out, shoot, pop, you know, yeah, get back in. And do you think that's really what killed it for you at the end, yes, of the day? Because it just became so horribly repetitive.
There was no threatening of it. If the buildings weren't bulletproof, so you could take things. If the robots just come inside,
it was just abusing mechanics. You found a way, yeah, to abuse mechanics
very easily. And I suspected fairly early on that the buildings, they wouldn't come. I mean, I want to be in a building and like, okay, I've tackled on 3 robots. It's too much. So I'm going to go hide the building. I want the robots sort of like searching the building, trying to find me. I want them, yeah, sort of like, sure, walking and looking around, trying to, and we have think, okay, I've got to try and sort of like get a drop on or take them out. Or, as you say, just have the buildings take damage. You know, not necessarily take damage, but like allow rounds through so that they're not perfect cover. So you've got the plan. It feels too easy.
Sure.
But I say it might worth a quick try in with groups, see if it gets better with a group. But yeah, single player, it's like a bit.
I'll be up for that.
Yeah, I'll put it on the list. So that's Generation Zero.
Fantastic.
Right, anything else from yourself, Scarce?
I do. Just one, and I don't think it's anything that you'd be particularly interested in, but I think I have pushed it to you before. So I've been wanting a VR MMO for ages. And I've played a few, and the ones that are currently on the market are absolutely, let's not mix words here, it's dog shite. They're usually dog shite. And recently, one that came to everyone's attention was, it's a game called Zenith, The Last City. And most people younger than me will say, oh, mate, a Sword Art Online. You know, finally a VR MMO where, you know, stuff's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. To me, though, it's Phantasy Star Online with Sword Art-y style physical combat in the VRs. It just came out. It's $20 or $22 or whatever. It's by Ramen VR, I believe. Yeah, early access, $22. I think that's right. It's on sale for 20, an odd choice, until the 3rd. It's on Steam, Oculus Quest. You can get it on the Oculus Store too as cross-buy. So if you bought an Oculus Quest, you get it on Oculus PC. They didn't advertise Oculus PC, like desktop support. They only really advertised the Quest. They linked to the Quest Store. And then, yeah, PlayStation VR, Steam, and Oculus. God, my brain just went then, sorry. And it's had a rough launch. I say rough launch, it's only a couple of days old now. You know, typical MMO groove.
Didn't have enough servers.
Yeah. They very quickly announced on launch day. It launched at like 6 p.m. UK. I was so psyched. I was up and ready by 1 o'clock in the morning of the 27th. It wasn't going live until 6 p.m. they've basically said at about 7 p.m. Sorry, our login servers, they're getting mullered. You know, the API for the login server is just getting completely crucified and people can't get in. We're trying to fix it. We've been humbled by this. We'll start adding server capacity and all that stuff as we go. We're trying to, you know, work with our provider and all that kind of stuff, which instantly makes people go mental because, like, I can't get in the game, 0 out of 10, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Loads of people making reverse Sword Art Online jokes, you know, Sword Art Online, you get into the game, you can't get back out. In this one, you couldn't get into the game. So, you know, but they have fixed the servers. There are problems all the way up until yesterday evening, but today I tried to log in. And it seems the fine. You pick a server, you create a character. I'm not entirely sure if the characters are server linked, so shard linked, or account linked, because it lets you change your server once every 24 hours. As I say, it's early access, so it's buggy as hell. So maybe it doesn't want me to keep choosing my server, but near enough every time I log in, it asks me, do I want to change my server? The text boxes for dialogue and stuff, text very rarely fits the box, so it'll like kind of bleed off onto the regular interface. The interface is messy and a bit clunky, but it's got potential. It is a proper first person MMO in VR. The combat is nowhere near as jank as it's been in other VR MMOs that I've seen. The music's quite nice. It very much reminds me of Phantasy Star Online. The environments are pretty nice, whether you play on Quest or PC. PC obviously looks a lot better, but Quest looks good enough. But yeah, you can climb up objects and stuff. You can fly or glide as long as your stamina will last. If you're a blade master character like me, you actually have to physically swing your arms about to swing your swords, and you have horizontal and vertical attacks. Like, so if you do three horizontal attacks, you'll use like cleave or whatever that will activate a special attack. For me, it's also timing based, so if I can't just wail on the enemy like mad, the faster I swing at the enemy, the less damage I do. So I have to actually time my attacks. So there's like a swing, hit, and then it'll go bing. And that means I can then hit again full power. If I pull triggers in as I swing in whatever direction, they can activate different attacks too. You can like throw swords and stuff. I don't know how magic users work because I don't play a magic user. But I see a lot of magic users just kind of gunning things down with ranged magic. But it's kind of fun. It is fun. Navigation's terrible. The fact that enemies don't tend to aggro you until you are right up in their face is interesting. You can skip a lot of combat by just being able to climb and glide. You know, yeah. So you can like, oh look, there's a lot of enemies by the door of this like dungeon base mine thing. And you just climb up the side of the building. Like, it doesn't need to have any climbable surface. It can just be like this. You know, like in that shooter you were playing where, you know, climb up the ladder, you just kind of stick to it. Well, it's the same in this, but like anything. You can stick to like walls, mountains, rope, all that. Look, you can just fucking, you're there. Like, it doesn't actually have to be an obviously climbable object. Everything is climbable. So you can skip around loads of stuff. If you find yourself surrounded by enemies, just climb up a mountain and they can't get you.
Yeah.
Like the quest system and all that is basically the same as every ever MMO under the sun. You know, kill 15 of that, gather how many of this item, go to this place. There's also like flying trials or gliding trials. So use this zip line to get up here and fly through all these rings around the map kind of thing. It's neat. It's an awkward one to explain. I can't really go too hardcore into it because it is early access. So anything I mention now could change tomorrow. And I did say that about the early access to the game. I didn't want to pay for early access. I didn't want to go for the Kickstarter version because it was a Kickstarter project, by the way. Because I've played MMOs in the past in early access and beta form and that, and then come in when the actual game launches, only to find they've like changed characters that I really liked to completely different character models and things like that, and it's really ruined my immersion. I didn't want to do that with Zenith, but if you're after a pretty promising VR MMO, Zenith, The Last City, seems pretty solid.
Is it sort of fantasy? Is it sort of sci-fi? Is it?
It's a combination, really. So, because the game, it's supposed to have established a story, but I don't know if maybe a cutscene bugged out or whatever, because I haven't been told anything. Just all of a sudden, I woke up in this kind of like under city section of this, of the last city or whatever, and this little like tutorial robot's talking to me. And I'm like, I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. And a bunch of characters on the surface call me the cursed one. So apparently I can't die. I can just respawn for whatever reason. None of this stuff seems to have actually been established. So whether or not these cutscenes were supposed to play and didn't, or maybe they're not in there, I don't know. Lore is incredibly thin at this point. I'm just following quests. Some of the stuff seems like really hardcore, like techie stuff, like Phantasy Star Online. And then other stuff does seem a bit like Sword Art, where, you know, people are running around with swords. There's magic. You're going through like villages made with, you know, wooden houses and stuff like that. You can go through like this picturesque style village, you know, a windmill, rivers and all that. Just really pretty scenery in that. And then all of a sudden you're in this big hulking city. So it's a mix, sci-fi, fantasy. Like I say, you can fly about and you can use magic and you've got the swords and you've got like demon-y things you can fight and human-y things you can fight. But as it stands, I don't actually really know quite what's going on because I haven't seen any cutscenes or anything. Maybe I've missed something. Maybe that's something that'll get patched in later on and I can rerun part of the story with a new character. But yeah. easiest way I can say, look at Phantasy Star Online, look at Sword Art Online, smush them both together, and that's this game, a first-person VR MMO. It's pretty sound. The people in the community are pretty nice from what I've seen so far, because voice chat is built into the game. You can mute mic and other players, so you can be one of those annoying people who don't mute your mic, but you can mute what other people are saying to you.
and the other way around. Off. Turn your mic basically. Turn your mic off, mate. Come on, mate.
It was actually weird because when I was playing it last night, everyone had their mics on, everyone had audio on. During the day, though, today, everyone had their audio off.
It's because they're all meant to be on their Zoom meetings at home, you see.
Yeah, for sure. So they're all chilling out in Zenith. But there was clearly a desire for it because it ended up in the top 10 most sold games on Steam on day of launch. Yeah, exactly. Look, it was in the top 10 most popular games on Steam. I'm really pleased to see
for
that.
For a VR game to get top 10 on Steam, that's pretty good.
That isn't like Half-Life or Medal of Honor or something like that. Yeah, I was pretty fucking psyched. It's $20. I say it's worth a punt for anyone that would like to try something different in VR, because we've had shit tons of shooters, we've had shit tons of like escape rooms and stuff. This is a VR MMO that I think is it's going the right way. It lacks polish. I really hope they can kind of refine it and get it to where it really deserves to be, because it looks really promising. And I've had a right laugh with it. I reckon it'll be a lot more fun when I've got more people in it. And as I said, cross-play, Steam, console, and Quest. So, and if you buy it on Quest, you've got it on PC through Oculus Store. If you buy it on the Oculus Store, you have it on Quest. So you've got a bonus there. You can move your account, because it is account-based, not store-based. you make your Ramen VR account or whatever, and that will allow you to go, right, I'm going to play on Steam today. I'm going to go play on my Oculus Quest today. I'm going to play on my PlayStation VR today. And your same characters will all appear on that account.
Sounds awesome.
So, oh, and no subscription. No subscription. An MMO with no subscription. That's fantastic.
Oh, so Guild Wardies style.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
They're going to hope that's sort of like the costs of people buying it and expansions will keep it going.
I hope so. I really, really hope so. I'm concerned, but I hope so.
Yeah. Guild Wars have made it work, so...
Yeah, well, I mean, fairness, though, not many people play Guild Wars these days. And Guild Wars is being propped up by a really, 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 really big company, so...
Yes, that is true.
I don't actually know how much they made in Kickstarter for Zenith, but I hope it's enough to keep it going. The character models look... I'm going to throw out there. Character models look absolutely fucking terrible. Character animations look absolutely terrible. But that doesn't matter because the enemies are pretty cool and all. It's fun. I would recommend it, Ram, actually, just to give it a dick about in it.
I might have a look at it.
So, like I said, it's on sale a couple quid off until the 3rd, and because you did say you were tempted to get a quest.
I am tempted to get a quest, yeah.
So I would potentially recommend maybe getting it on the Oculus Store, so you've got it on PC and...
Yeah.
What's it called?
Steam?
Yeah. You've got it on PC and standalone?
Oculus. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'll have a look at it. I'll have a quick look.
Or, because it's cheap, you can get it on both.
Yeah.
Like I did. I really wanted to do one. I've already kind of got a group together.
Very bright.
Yes. It's like a cel-shady... It really does remind me of Phantasy Star, mate. It really does. The first area you get dumped into reminds me of Phantasy Star or Phantasy Star Online. The music of the intro screen reminds me of Phantasy Star. To me, it ticked all the boxes. It's just a little bit wobbly around the edges. I think that an issue that a lot of people are going to have is, like, you know, the combat isn't as precise as you'd like in an MMO, but then it is waggle controls, so it's something that old-timers like me are just going to have to get used to, whereas I think, you know, younger players are just going to be like, oh, yeah, this feels totally natural.
Yeah.
Yeah, see you. Yeah. Let it go.
I'll look at it. I'm looking at it now on the website, actually, at the moment. There's a pandery, floaty pandery thing. I'll have a look at it. It does look interesting.
That's good. I mean, like I say, you might completely bounce off of it. I know some people who already kind of have, but I mean, if you got into it, I wouldn't mind coming around and partying with you, and then we could just like steamroll a bunch of the quests and actually just explore the world. I think it would be a nice world to explore because it does look quite good. It's not Half-Life Alyx good, but, you know...
No, but then when you want sort of large scale like that, you have to sacrifice... you have to sacrifice graphical quality...
Yeah.
In order to get a scale, because with VR, it's very important. You don't want it to be slowed down, because that can really.
Oh, it crucifies my laptop, by the way.
Does it?
Yes. It crucifies my laptop. My PC does get the occasional bit of slowdown, but I don't know if that's server side.
Bonus.
I mean, it's early access. I'm sure they'll optimize as time goes, so.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
Because they don't actually have a recommended system requirements listing on Steam. They just have the minimum.
Simplistic but pretty.
I mean, it looks okay on the Quest too. It's not fantastic, but it looks okay. It's totally passable.
Yeah. It's sort of abstract, but enough. It's what I call good enough quality.
Yeah.
Good enough that you're not going to think too much about it.
There's also just thrown out there, because we can climb and fly anywhere in the game, it's actually kind of, I recommend that people do kind of go off the beaten path from time to time and just randomly climb things, because there are like hidden points where you can touch like these glyphs, and they will give you information left behind from like, I don't know, a story, hidden story stuff.
Yeah.
You know, character motivation and that hidden around the world. Like I just randomly climbed a mountain today, just for no reason, just climbed it, just up the side of the mountain, stamina ran out, climbed up a bit more, got up to the top, and there was this like hidden treasure chest and a glyph that I could use. And it was fucking cool. So I'm like, oh, what's in that mountain over there? It'd be a nice world to explore once I've got my level up.
Yeah.
Or a nice world to explore when you've got a couple of mates together.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'll definitely give that a look.
Cool.
Coolio. Right.
That's it for me, mate. That's it for Anything you. Else?
Well, no, I'll quickly throw out there. Pre-order opened for Tau today, so I've ordered 120 gold quid worth of Tau stuff.
Damn, dude.
I didn't go quite mad. There was a set on there, which was the new book, a set of dice to go with it, load of models, what else do you have? Some data cards, which you use in gameplay, and an actual... like pitch the book, the cover of the book, the actual like print of it, which has been signed by the artist, that was £200. I didn't go for that.
You wanted it though.
I was very tempted, but I was like, no, I can't justify it because, like, I don't really want a load more models because I've got a build, I've got a like you have a shrimp pile came, I've got a pile of models that are currently unpainted sat on the shelf, and I was like, and I thought, no. I won't go for any models, so I didn't go for that. There's another kit on there, which is £300, which is like an entire fucking army. And,
wow.
You know, good. So it's literally everything you need to start playing Tau. But I definitely didn't go for that.
That doesn't sound like a too bad of an investment if you start from nothing and end up with a full kit. That's pretty cool.
It's not a massive army, but it's enough to start. You can get on the battle. You'll be on the battlefield with that. And it's a decent start. You can soon add stuff to it. I've put some money in that. I've also been getting. This is terrible. I follow the I would never do this. I follow the subreddit for Tau, and there's one there. And it's been on for ages, and people like show what they're painting and stuff like this, and like discuss color schemes, and many say. Yeah, and when it says, what's this army you like to play? Yeah, we're fucked at the moment because we're really underpowered, but it's still a fun army to play. You just don't expect to win anything.
Sure.
Well, since the leaks have been coming out, nearly every day is posts of people going on there saying, yeah, I'm playing this army, but I'm starting to start a Tau army up. Here's what I'm getting into. And I was like, Barbie's like, I shouldn't be gatekeeper. You fucking poser. You no one touch us until all of a sudden now we're a good army. Now you're all suddenly popping up on it. Yeah, I'm joining the greater good. It's like, fuck you.
As soon as the meta shifts, all the people that criticised you are like, oh, mate, this is well good. I've always liked Tau on the side.
There's one guy posting, look, I follow the meta. Tau are going to be great soon. I'm starting an army. Where do I begin? It's like, okay, fair enough. I've got respect for you because you're at least not trying to pretend like, hey.
Yeah, that's it.
It feels like, you know, when you have that person, everybody has, I'm sure those people in our lives who, they only ever come to you when they want something. And they're possibly quite nasty to you normally. Then all of a sudden, they're all sweetness and nice when they want something off you. It feels a bit like that. So,
yeah, I get the groove. So I like, totally get the groove.
Yeah, I mustn't gatekeep. It's like, but God, it's annoying. where are you? All of a sudden, Tau look good. Now you're all here all of a sudden. So,
mate.
Yeah. But yeah, Tau. Great. Awesome. In that case, I suggest we call it to an end. So, thank you, George Rottering. I've been the Suffolk Ram.
Scazius.
And you can join us again in a fortnight's time on the 12th of February, where I'll be joining via 4G connection.
Ooh, because, you're going to be terrorists and that up again.
I'm farm sitting that weekend.
Oh, okay.
So I'll be from the farmhouse and I'll be joining via 4G connection.
There you go. So, I wasn't sure if you were going to get stopped by riot police again.
No, I won't get stopped. I won't get caught.
I'm never going to let you live that down, mate.
I'm in the chat of a church group, and all of a sudden the police turn up.
Like, that was fantastic.
Hi guys. Yep, so I'll be doing that. So that'll be on the 12th. You can join us for our games night. Our next one is on the 1st of February. And we're still playing through Vermintide, which we'll discuss, I'm sure, in a future podcast, which we've played a bit more of it.
Yeah.
And Zabe is back. Our Danish man has returned. So you can come watch us kill loads of rats. You can join us on our Twitch channels. I'm twitch.tv/thesuffergram.
No, I'm twitch.tv/Skazius, SK4ZZI0US.
So once again, thank you for joining us today, and I will see you guys at some point in the future.
Take it easy, guys.
See you later, guys.